They ordered the shipment of 2 Van de Graaff generators from Michigan, a cyclotron from Harvard, and a Cockcroft-Walton machine from the University of Illinois. All were essential. The Van de Graaff generators would be used to run basic physics measurements. The Cockcroft-Walton machine, the first particle accelerator, was necessary for experiments in which various elements could be artificially transmuted into other elements. The construction of Los Alamos, the recruitment of scientists, and the assembling of all the equipment necessary for the world's first nuclear weapons laboratory required a meticulous and patient administrator. In early 1943, Oppenheimer was neither. He had never supervised anything larger than his graduate seminars. In 1938, he had been responsible for 15 graduate students. Now he was directing the work of hundreds, soon to be thousands, of scientists and technicians. Nor did his peers believe he was temperamentally suited for the job. He was something of an eccentric, almost a professional eccentric when I knew him before 1940, recalled Robert Wilson, a young experimental physicist who was then studying under Ernest Lawrence. He just wasn't the kind of person that you would think would be an administrator. As late as December 1942, James Conant wrote Groves that he and Vannevar Bush were wondering whether we have found the right man to be the leader. Even John Manley had serious misgivings about serving as Oppie's deputy. I was somewhat frightened of his evident erudition, Manley recalled, and his lack of interest in mundane affairs. Manley was particularly worried about the laboratory's organization. I bugged Oppie for I don't know how many months about an organization chart, who was going to be responsible for this and who was going to be responsible for that. Oppenheimer ignored his pleas until finally, one day in March 1943, Manley climbed to the top floor of LeConte Hall and pushed open the door of Oppenheimer's office. When Oppenheimer glanced up to see him standing there, he knew exactly what Manley wanted. Grabbing a piece of paper, he threw it down on his desk and said, "Here's your damned organization chart." Oppenheimer envisioned 4 broad divisions within the laboratory: experimental physics, theoretical physics, chemistry and metallurgy, and finally, ordnance. Group leaders within each of these divisions would report to the division chiefs, and the division chiefs would report to Oppenheimer. It was a beginning. In early 1943, Oppenheimer sent the 28-year-old Robert Wilson to Harvard to arrange for the safe shipment of Harvard cyclotron to Los Alamos. On March 4th, Wilson arrived at Los Alamos to inspect the building that would house the cyclotron. He found utter chaos. There seemed to be no schedule, no planning, and no line of responsibility. Wilson complained about the situation to Manley, and the two men agreed they should confront Oppenheimer. Their meeting in Berkeley was a disaster. Oppenheimer became angry and swore at them. Stunned, Wilson and Manley left wondering if he was up to the challenge. A Quaker by ancestry, Wilson was a pacifist when the European War erupted. So it was quite a change for me to find, in fact, that I would be working on this horrible project. But like everyone else he knew at Los Alamos, Wilson feared above all the prospect of the Nazis winning the war with an atomic weapon. And while privately he still hoped that they might someday prove that an atomic bomb was not possible, he was eager to build it if it could be built. Hard-working and serious-minded by temperament, Wilson initially found himself annoyed by Oppenheimer's arrogant demeanor. "I sort of disliked him," he later said. "He was such a smart aleck and didn't suffer fools gladly, and maybe I was one of the fools he hadn't suffered." In the end, however disconnected from his responsibilities Oppenheimer may have seemed before he moved to Los Alamos, he quickly demonstrated his capacity for change. Wilson was surprised after several months at Los Alamos to see his boss metamorphose into a charismatic and efficient administrator. The once eccentric theoretical physicist, a long-haired, left-wing intellectual, was now becoming a first-rate, highly organized leader. "He had style and he had class," Wilson said. "He was a very clever man. And whatever we felt about his deficiencies, in a few months he had corrected those deficiencies and obviously knew a lot more than we did about administrative procedures. Whatever our qualms were, why, they were soon allayed." By the summer of 1943, Wilson noticed that, "When I was with him, I was a larger person. I became very much of an Oppenheimer person and just idolized him. I changed around completely."